I want to welcome you to the November session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is David Arterburn. I am from this district and sit here in Papillion. I am pleased to be joined with, on my left, by Rico Bishop, Judge Rico Bishop of Lincoln, and on my right by Judge Mike Pirtle from Omaha. We have four cases that are before us, and I believe that we did apprise the parties that we are making a slight change in that I am recused on the first case that was listed, in that I was still a district court judge at that time and did participate in the early stages of that case. So I am recused on that case. So we will move that case to the end of the call, and we will have our first argument in Bridewell versus Walton. So the parties may come forward to council table. I would remind the parties that while the arguments here in Sarpy County are not live streamed, they are recorded and put on the website. If there is any sensitive information that may be argued in any of the cases today, please keep in mind that the arguments are made open to the public by virtue of our website. So we will take up Bridewell versus Walton. And is it Mr. Sullivan? You may come forward and proceed. Again, this is Bridewell versus Walton. Reserve 3 minutes
for rebuttal. May it please the court. My name is Robert Sullivan, and I represent Gary and Brett Walton and Walton Construction. This is, of course, a home construction case or a remodel case. In southern south central Nebraska. As briefed, I discussed a number of errors. Primarily what I'd like to talk about today is the admission of evidence on water infiltration inside the walls of the home as well as mold, because during the trial those issues came up for the first time. In my brief, I referenced Law v. Ernst & Young, which is a case out of California. But in further research since filing a brief quite a while ago, I've also come across a Nebraska case which I think is pretty relevant, and that is Commodity Traders Inc. versus Finn, which is 1st NEBAP 394, or it's also 87 Northwest 2nd 297. It's a 1992 case which references another Nebraska case which I think gives us some basis for looking at this case, and that is Youngins versus O'Toole, which is 199 Nebraska 317 and 258 Northwest 2nd 810, which is a 1997 case. And in those two cases, just like we did at trial, we asked the court to amend the pleadings to conform to the evidence and also to allow us to file an amended answer with an affirmative defense, which in our case was mitigation because of this water infiltration and the mold issue that had come up for the first time in trial. In those two cases, the court looked at evidence that the affirmative defense was newly discovered and a reason why the defense could not have been pled in the original answer. And so in our case, this goes into that admission of evidence over my objection on the water infiltration issue and mold issue. In the appellee's brief, they state that I brought up mold when cross-examining the appellant, the plaintiff in that case, earlier in the case, but that's actually not how it happened. I was asking Mr. Bridwell a number of questions about photographs that they had taken, which did show some stains from water inside the home, very minor stains, and that's when Mr. Bridwell, for the first time in the case, mentioned the possibility of mold in the home. That had never been in any pretrial discovery, it wasn't in any pleadings, it wasn't in any part of the case until we actually got into the evidentiary testimony at trial. That's when Mr. Bridwell brought up mold for the first time. Right after that, I asked Mr. Bridwell what he had done to keep water from infiltrating into the home. And in the appellee's brief, they actually referenced part of that testimony, but they leave out his response to that answer. And he responded, "I haven't," which means he hasn't done anything over a period of about 3 years to keep water from getting into that house after my client had stopped construction on the home.
And the basis of your objection when
Mould first came in, what was the basis of the objection?
On that occasion, when he said, when he brought up mould, I didn't object because he was responding to the pictures that I talked about. I didn't want to highlight the word mould for the jury any further. I didn't want to stop, go to the judge for a sidebar, have that testimony withdrawn and stricken. I didn't make any sort of an objection when the first time the word mold came up. What I did was I asked him what he had done to keep water from coming into the house, because I immediately went into a mitigation stance on it. And I wanted to get past the word mold because, of course, mold's a four-letter word, especially to homeowners. So I wanted to get past as quick as I could. When he said, I haven't done anything to mitigate this, I thought, okay, now we've got to work on this if this is going to be an issue in the case. And for the rest of the, I think it was another day and a half of testimony, it never came up again. So I never did anything at that point until we get to the last witness. Mr. Schultz, which is Mr. Bridwell's cousin, gave a very high estimate on rebuilding the house, basically. So I called him as my witness because I knew that he would testify, we don't really have to rebuild the house. You know, this is okay, this is okay. And if this is an easy fix and that takes care of everything, in essence, what he did is he came down to about a $400 or $500 estimate to repair the damage to the home. And then plaintiff's attorney cross-examined him and brought up water infiltration in the walls and allowed him to testify again about mold, and I objected to those. So when it became a big issue, again, for really the second time of the trial over the course of about a day and a half, was when I made my objection to relevance and to, I can't remember exactly what I said, but the court overruled it. Well, that's when I, that was our second to last witness. So when we got to our last, when we rested, then I moved the court to, actually before I rested, moved the court to amend the pleadings to conform to the evidence, and I introduced a new jury instruction on mitigation, but the court denied that.
Is there a reason you didn't plead mitigation of the failure to mitigate damages in your answer?
Yeah, there was just absolutely no facts that would have brought that up. There was no mitigation issues. Because we in the pleadings that they had pled, there was nothing that would have said, well, they could have changed this by doing something else. They were all looking at, it was poor workmanship, it was poor craftsmanship, windows have to be redone, some doorways have to be redone, but not because of water infiltration, because of they weren't plumb or square. And so it's primarily aesthetics. There was no issue with any type of water infiltration or mold in the home in any of the pleadings. Then we got into discovery, still never came up. So I never, I never had a good reason to plead any type of mitigation up to that time, because there was, regardless of mold or water, there was no other reason to plead it either.
Did photographs which had been produced during discovery, did the photographs show evidence of mold?
No. What they showed was, like, around some of the door jams and edges of windows, some water stains, but very minor. And it was anything that would lead anybody to believe that this is a serious issue. Plus, they had simply said that, they were leaking from, a little bit of rainwater or something, I think in the course of the trial or pretrial discovery, but never alleged that there was any problems inside the walls or mold.
Was there any evidence related to mold causing damage and the cost to repair such damage?
No. And as a matter of fact, when Mr. Schultz was asked about it at the end of the trial, he basically said he'd already walked back on his, I think it was an $94,000 estimate to rebuild the home completely, which had nothing to do with mold. But he had already walked that back to about $400 or $500 when the plaintiff's counsel asked him, given the fact that there could be moisture in the walls, what would that do? And that's when he said, well, then you got to tear the whole thing down to some effect. So.
But there's no way to, how would the mold have factored into the jury's decision? In other words, how were you prejudiced by not being able to amend and add?
Well, specifically with Mr. Schultz, who is the cousin of the appellee, his testimony, I think, carried quite a bit of weight. And so if he's up there saying, well, I guess there's other ways to do this that's a lot cheaper, he had already wiped out almost the entire estimate to rebuild the home. And then he comes back and he says, but if there is mold, then we do have to demolish the home. We're back up to my estimate of, $94,000 or $100,000.
So he did link the mold to that higher estimate.
Yes. So I was highly prejudiced by that. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Murray.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Ben Murray, and I represent Appellees Chuck and Sylvia Bridwell. As you're aware, my clients spent their entire retirement savings getting this house remodeled, and it didn't go as planned. Appellants, by their own admission, performed shoddy work. Those windows were out of square. The house wrap was put on wrong. So it was kind of a mess altogether. I'll focus on the water issue. The way it came up was in cross-examination. So we had all put these pictures together as a group, and so we offered them together. So some were pictures from the plaintiff, some were from the defense, and some of them had water spots on them.
Foundation had been waived on
yes.
all those?
Yes. And so we, on cross-examination, appellant's counsel asked Chuck Bridwell a series of questions about why house wrap matters, what house wrap is, about did you see these pictures with water on the floor? And it was, they were all leading questions. What would happen if water leaked around windows? What would happen if water got behind a wall? And it was just leading him along and eventually said, I don't know, mold? So that's where it came up. It never came up in direct. It never came up when we were going over the pictures. And then from that point on, it was mentioned again just the one time by their expert or their contractor that they call Schultz. It seems as if maybe that's your only, if that's your only way to get mitigation back in the trial, if it was waived at the beginning, that might be how one would go about doing it, to try to bring it in on cross, to try to get the plaintiff to say something about mold.
But you had not pled anything in relation to mold or seeking damages for mold or mold remediation, right?
No, nothing at all.
It was just breach of contract and breach of warranties.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and it was mostly just, they just wanted it fixed right. I mean, that was the only issue. And the water didn't have anything to do with any of the claims. What we think is that, it was waived. It was at the judge's discretion to let them amend or not. She heard the evidence. She knew what happened. And she agreed that they had already waived it. So them bringing it up doesn't give them a second bite of the apple to try and, amend their pleadings just based on that.
Had there been a pretrial order entered into? I didn't find one in the record where deadlines for amending pleadings have been entered?
I don't recall in a specific case, but I'm in front of this judge a lot, and generally there is one, and everything needs to be done 30 days before trial. But I don't recall if in this one there was directly that my experience.
But counsel saying that mold wasn't an issue, you agree it wasn't pled, and it really just came up at trial, and it became an issue at trial.
I don't believe it was an issue at trial. The jury came back with $40,000. I think they took one of the two. So our contractor said $120,000 to fix it. Theirs said $99,000. And then on cross, it was developed that there were certain things that could have been maybe saved instead of tearing it all the way down. So my assumption is they said, well, maybe they can save the roof. Maybe they can just support the floor. And that's how they worked themselves down to $40,000. I don't think that mold had anything to do with it.
There was no itemization for mold damage.
None at all. It was all, and it was gone through step by step by appellant's counsel. Is it possible that instead of tearing it down, we could just add some more support under the floor? And it appears to me as though that's how they came up with the $40,000, and they just worked themselves back and thought, well, maybe the windows aren't square, but maybe they can stay in, that sort of thing. I don't think mold had any effect on the trial at all. It was only mentioned two times, and then we had the discussion about amending the pleadings.
What about the assignment of error regarding the lack of evidence as to the standard for a workmanlike manner?
I don't think it was actually testified to that it was a workmanlike manner, but our contractor and their contractor both said it didn't even rise to the level of a DIY homeowner. There was no standard that it met. They said everything you could tell from the, I think one of them said you could see from the street that the windows didn't line up. And I think it was our contractor, McLaughlin, said that he'd seen DIY jobs, as good good or better than this. And then their contractor testified that he agreed with everything that, McLaughlin had said. So I think the testimony was that it didn't rise to any standard. It was terrible work. And I, even the appellants said they used the word shoddy construction. So I think that was the evidence of the workmanlike hand. Although the actual term may not have come out of trial.
Have there been any challenges to anybody's qualifications to justify as an expert?
Only two. They brought in a structural engineer, and he ended up only answering like three questions because I think he testified that he'd never worked on a project this small before. He did like huge projects in Lincoln, Omaha, and so I objected to him, and then, but he didn't end up testifying, and he answered three questions. Any further questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right, and how much time does Mr. Sullivan have? All right, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you. So I think I did misspeak actually earlier. I said the first time mold was brought up was in cross-examination at the first part of the trial. Mr. Bridwell never mentioned mold in that cross-examination. He simply said that water is coming inside the house. The first time that mold ever was brought up was toward the end of the trial, within the last probably half hour of the trial, when plaintiff's counsel asked Mr. Schultz about it, and then he started taking off on it, and that's when I objected. So one correction there, and the record speaks for itself, but I would ask you look for that fact in the record. The other issue that I think was just brought up with Mr. Murray was the standard to which a plaintiff is held in a case like this, this workmanlike standard. I did spend quite a bit of time talking with the witnesses about their qualifications to show that the standard that they were holding my client to was their own personal standard. And both of the construction experts in the case said that he's not up to my standard, and both of them testified that they are above average, they're better than the average contractor. So,
but when your clients admit that the workmanship was shoddy, I mean, that seems to me to create a real problem for you to argue that workmanlike manner was not met.
Context is very important with that. That was with regard to one photo about a roof beam coming out from the side of the roof that had been cut at a little bit of an angle. And Brett Walton testified when asked that, well, you know, that doesn't look very good. I don't think that meets our standards, and that would be something that we would address. So on one thing that was stated, it wasn't that all their work was shoddy. It was on one occasion when Mr. Brett Walton said, yeah, that picture shows some shoddy work. They admit that. But that doesn't go to the whole context of the whole job.
Did the jury instructions include an instruction that defined what a workmanlike standard is?
Yes.
Okay. So how is it that the jury was unable to not apply that when
I think
the facts that were given?
I understand that. I think that in order to get something before the jury, it has to be more than a jury instruction. It has to be something that's in evidence so that they can tie it to somebody that, an expert that came in and said, I know what the workmanlike product is in this area because I'm an inspector or I've had years of experience working in this area. None of that testimony was ever part of the case. You have this standalone jury instruction, but how does the jury know what to apply that to? It's a fact issue.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. The case will be taken under advisement. Parties are excused. Thank you for coming.